At least you got out of there.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's all good.
Yeah, did you have to make a run for it, Beatles style?
Yeah, I had to go back and like cut through like where food, yeah, food was being served and like all the way out around. I feel bad, you know, it's like that sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, but at a certain point you just gotta be like.
Yeah, you can't ever because like people keep coming too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone knowing that we are, right?
You know? Yeah.
Okay. I'm a pretty big fan of your videos, and I heard you. I'm like, I was standing over here waiting for my friend to get out of the bathroom, and I caught a picture profile, and I'm like, Amanda.
Yeah. I feel like you guys get this a lot from both ends.
Yeah, yeah, that's what happens.
Yeah.
I'm just about to stop.
The problem of being a power couple.
I guess.
Well, said, hey,
I was like, this would be a great place to do it. It's like, no. Yeah. Away, you know?
Yeah. Well, that was the problem of being up front.
Crazy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like not even serving a purpose of medium.
Not at all.
Yeah. Like, so it's probably better that we're doing it.
They're supposed to have all the doors closed constantly, yeah. But it gets really hot in there, so they just have them open, and people walk by. It's like, hey, look at that person. It's like, no. Yeah. They're like, yeah, you can talk to Steph till later. We got to talk.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. No, I can understand. That's probably annoying.
Yeah.
Sure. Dude, like, you're trying to do your job. Like, you have to set everything up.
Yeah, and eventually we just, like, went outside and, like, we were just sweating. Because, like, that was the only deterrent we had against people.
Come over here, man. Spot.
Maybe. Right. Well, yeah, I only got one more today, so maybe I can convince them to come over here. Well, it's actually Milana from...
Oh, nice. Yeah, she's very exciting.
Yeah.
She's humorous.
Yeah, well, last year when I interviewed her, it was mostly just her and Stevie, just, like, talking. Yeah. I was like... I'll wait.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll just let you guys do it.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so let's dive right into esports now.
Yeah.
There's generally just been a problem of traditional mainstream video game press, such as myself, trying to cover esports. Like, what do you think is the biggest problem that's arisen so far?
So I think, like, the biggest problem, you look at traditional sports, people do a really good job of creating human emotion, right? So you end up having a vested interest in the players. So particularly, that was always what I saw was like a pretty big hole. You know, you can cover it at a surface level, you can go to events, you can talk about that experience, and it's all great. But it never really completely did a service to esports. So, because you never were emotionally invested in it. So what I wanted to do with Versus in esports is create more human interest programming where it's all original programming, you can really dive in, learn these players, because in sports, sometimes, most of the time, you're associating geographically, right? So you're like, this is my hometown or relative distance, you know, so I'm going to support this team and I have an interest of the players that come through here. And it's a little bit harder to get that association with teams when there's no geographical kind of association with it. So I feel like you really need to have more of this vested interest. And that's why, you know, to answer that question was a kind of a question I asked myself, was like, what are we going to do to cover this space? Like, where is the, you know, because editorial does a pretty good job, like GameSpot, a lot of these people do a good job covering and stuff. So I was like, let's dive more into the players and get into that. So do you want to root for the underdog? Do you want to root for the guy that's had a rough life and now he's a great pro? And, you know, like, what are some of these success stories that came through, right? And let's really shine them, because there's so many stories that are untold in these sports about these players and the lives that they've gone through that are incredibly interesting, that I feel like if you're not that into esports, you could become into esports because you become interested in this individual for whatever the reason is. You know what? Maybe it's something you know, similar life experience that all of a sudden, like this double lift piece you did, right? It was like, he had a really, you know, not tough childhood, but he was raised by, you know, as he would describe, like very stereotypical Asian parents that were very strict and had a regiment that they wanted him to focus, and he kind of deviated away from that doing esports, and they didn't understand it, and it was very like teenage angst, you know, towards his parents, and also them just kind of, you know, and fairly enough ignorant to what was happening in the space and what he could do in there and how much money he could make and what kind of lifestyle he could create for himself. So I think, you know, a lot of people saw that don't care anything about esports that were like, this is fascinating, right? This is incredibly fascinating what this guy's gone through and where he's at now. So it's a long-winded answer, but yeah.
That seems like especially something a lot of people can relate to. Yeah. It's not strictly like, yeah, Asian parents, different expectations.
Yep.
But how do you get people even initially into that? Because you have to be like, this is a long story about someone you don't know.
Yeah.
How do you get there?
I think there needs to still be, and it's still not done, a lot more explanation of what esports is, right? Because, you know, you've got a lot of people that are in gaming. It's a massive thing. Everybody's doing it anymore.
And that makes it easier to tell the story of, like, right, so now there's, you know, everybody's a gamer anymore. I mean, my mom plays Candy Crush, right? You know, it's like, mom, whether you want to say it or not, you're a gamer. Yeah. You know, like, you play video games, period. And now it's starting to articulate the story of, like, well, on top of that, there are people that are doing competitive format that are playing, and I think, you know, broadcasting it and making it exciting to watch, which is getting to that point, all of these things. And you can slowly move somebody into that, right? Where it's like, oh, you like games? Like, of course, you're probably going to like games at some kind of competitive level if it's formatted in an intriguing way or you have an interest in that game. So I think, like, as far as introducing people into it, I think just setting the message, like, everybody's a gamer anymore, and then how you're broadcasting those matches and getting people to come in, tune in, because that's your entry point, right? Like, you might not watch the Double Live video until you've watched the League of Legends broadcast. So it's like, how do you get them to start tuning in? And I think it starts at a developer level, right? I mean, the success that you've seen has come because of how much Riot is invested from a marketing standpoint into the young, in their game, into people watching it and making it easily accessible to all League of Legends players. It's like, you log into League of Legends client, it's there. So if you want it, it's readily being served up to you. Like, Call of Duty, not so much. It's hard. Maybe they'll do, like, a message of the day or something, but it's not being, like, served up to you in real time. So a lot of it, people aren't aware of it, right? There's an awareness issue. In League of Legends, you don't see that because of how much they're, like, they're completely injecting it into their League of Legends mainstream. So I think that's the only way that it's going to have a high level of success, where you're seeing hundreds and hundreds of thousands concurrency, million concurrency, is through that, right? It's got to start really at a developer level, because nobody can market their game better than the developer.
From the inside out, because Riot, they just started an internal editorial team about League of Legends.
So they have, like, lolesports.com, right?
Yeah.
And they'll crowdsource content, so, like, our content will be up there, but then they're creating their own content as well. They're doing their own editorial as well. So it's a fine mix, because you want to empower other people to do the content, to make it, like, authentic. Because if Riot did everything, then it's kind of like, it loses authenticity in a big way. But when they're doing a little bit of it, and then they're also supporting these sub-communities that are doing content, but that's the right mix, because you can still dictate and control your brand messaging through your own content, but you're allowing people to be honest. You know, like, it's the difference between the NFL Network talking about the NFL and Roger Goodell compared to ESPN, that's able to talk, for the most part, a very non-biased view towards him, right? When the messaging you'll get from the NFL Network is just not going to be authentic. It's just, they can't be, right? It's their own brand.
Yeah. So where do you think that... I view that sort of NFL ESPN thing sort of like a check and balance thing. Where do you think that balance is going to come from? Because there's always been a problem with, who was it, Slasher from GameSpot recently?
Yeah.
Like, where does that balance come from? Because it seems like the trust is already a little bit missing.
I mean, the only way it's going to come from is external, like a Machinima Versus or a GameSpot and all that, and it's difficult, right? You know, because it's a fine line. You don't want to get, like, blackballed in the industry where all of a sudden Riot's not letting you cover press. But at some point, these things will happen, and there will be a story to tell about that, where then Riot's going to have to change, right? You know, I mean, the internet is very powerful. Reddit is very powerful, right? You know, if there is any wrongdoing by Blizzard, by Valve, by Riot, that you can get that message out there, and people will listen. I mean, you look at even Reddit, like, take example, like, player behavior, like, tribunal cases, right? Where somebody, in a rare instance, was actually wrongfully accused or shouldn't have been banned, and they can't get anybody to listen to them through the ticket system, right? But all of a sudden, they post it on Reddit, League of Legends Reddit, you know, it's got 5 million unique users a month on there. They shoot that to the top, and immediately that problem is resolved. So there's definitely a platform for people that feel like they want to have a voice against, you know, Riot or against Valve or whatever the game may be. There's a lot of platforms to kind of, like, convey that. And it's going to have to come from that, like any traditional media, right? You know, it's going to have to come from the outside. And, you know, Slasher, he's done that in many different cases over the years, you know? I mean, he's a polarizing individual, so it's not that it's a lack of credibility with him. It's just, you know, he likes to kick the tires a lot, so it's kind of like, oh, Slasher, you know, with him sometimes. Yeah. But people have the ability to have their voice heard, and I think you can call any of these games out and hold them accountable, and I think these external voices are real, you know?
So do you think the external is from the press, or the community, do you think, is going to play the bigger role in that?
I think it's the community is always going to play a bigger role, because it's a numbers game, right? They can collectively, as a mass, you know, the hive mind, anything, right? And work towards a common goal. But I feel like press can instigate that as well in a big way. You know, like if they were doing anything wrong, or we, you know, we felt uncomfortable, or that they weren't, you know, accurately telling a story or trying to silence us from telling a story, like, that's not gonna fly. You know what I'm saying? It's just there's like enough people out there. You don't have to worry about like being threatened or silenced, right, to have a voice. Like, I even doing like versus content where we'll talk about how player behavior is a good system, but it's not like there yet, right? It's not where it needs to be. Like, I don't feel like Riot's gonna treat us differently now, or like not invite us to LCS to cover or anything, right? You know, so I feel like we're able to have an honest discussion about things, and they're gonna listen. You know, I think you need the community though, right? Like, press can't, you know, you can create content, you can create an editorial piece, but if no one's reading it and no one agrees, or no one's watching it and agrees, then it's not gonna happen. So you have to appease the community, because they're the catalyst of the voice, right?
Yeah, being contrarian can only get you so far.
Right.
And that kind of plays into the accessibility issue of esports. Because I feel like when most people think about esports, they think a lot about like first-person shooters, like Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Because it's the most easily visually understandable.
Yeah.
But then it's also perhaps something that's not as easily like mentally wrapped around.
Yeah, so like, I think to your point where people recognize like Quake and Counter-Strike as early pioneers of esports, and certainly StarCraft, right? You know, StarCraft 1. It is easy in the sense of being able to describe, to describe like straight up the shooter, this is happening, but things happen so quickly. So where something like a MOBA, where you're like five guys, they're gonna keep battling it out until they destroy a Nexus. Or StarCraft 2, they're two bases, they're building up a military. It's like so much more digestible when you're looking at like an aerial view of something. You're like, I get it, right? Because it looks more like checkers. When something like a Call of Duty or a Counter-Strike, it's like kill, 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 kill. And you're like, I find at one point, like, what the hell is actually happening?
Yeah.
So articulating it as a commentator is very difficult, right? And it turns more into like a horse race, right? So you're talking about this, and they're doing this, and this, and this, and this, and this. It's difficult. I think shooters have a handicap that like RTS and MOBAs don't have to go through, just because it's just so much going on. You know, like, I look at my mom as I really do believe is a good example, right? Because like, she's not a gamer, right? These are people that eventually, if you really want esports to be this like mass thing that everybody talks about being, like, you're gonna have to somehow, like, them understand it. My mom doesn't watch football, but she understands football, the basic principles of football, right? Like, she needs, like, how do you get her to understand the basic principles of League of Legends and StarCraft 2 and Call of Duty and stuff? So you have to start thinking like that. And everything needs to be more educational in our broadcast, too. We can't assume that everybody watching knows Hardpoint and Anchors and all these different roles and objectives, or like League of Legends, where you start talking about items and items and items and, you know, 100 champions and all of these different concepts, right? There's so many levels of understanding, right? So I feel like a very important part these next 3 to 5 years are going to be educational, and that we can't get wrapped up in the hardcore base, right? Because if you just assume that, like, oh yeah, everyone knows that, you know, Jace goes with an Abyssal Scepter and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like, no, dude. Like, I've played League of Legends, like, a lot, dude. I play a lot of League of Legends, and when I watch LCS, there's still stuff where I'm like, well, why did he go with that build? Or, you know, why aren't they warding, right? Like, questions that, as somebody that's been in esports for all these years, like, I still don't know, right? So we need to make sure that there's a lot of educational things that are happening. It doesn't always have to happen at a broadcast level, right? But there needs to be video content that people can consume outside of the game. Like, Day 9's great at it, right? You know, like, helping you become a better StarCraft 2 player from a bronze level. Like, you suck, dude. You're bronze, right? But then you hear all these stories about, like, players going from bronze to platinum from just watching them. And, like, we need to have that for viewers as well, people that don't want to play but need to understand it.
Yeah. How do you as a commentator purposely make that balance? Where you, like, you still want to appeal to people who know the game?
Yeah, it's a fine line, and what I always try to do is, and you know, so each game mode's like 10 minutes, right? I always try to point out certain parts of, like, what's happening in the game is like, oh, thank you very much. Like, this is why, why he's doing it, right? Like, explain the anchor, you know, and if you gotta, like, slowly integrate it into the game, because it can't just be 10 minutes of a tutorial, right? Because then people will, like, they'll go crazy, like, shut up, okay? Because there's a lot of people that understand the game. Like, in football, it's cool when they'll sometimes talk about, like, oh, you know, he did this play action pass and allowed for this receiver to be open, right? But if you talk about that every single play, like, you're like, stop, you know, like, I know what offsides is, right? You don't need to explain it every single time. So it's a very fine line, and again, it can't all happen at the broadcast level,
right? how do you think team outreach plays into that? Because when you look at traditional sports, they all have a full team infrastructure with managers and like social media stuff. With teams, you basically just have like VVV, Quantic, and Team Liquid, who like do their own coverage. How do you make all teams reach that level of outreach?
I think it's tough, right? It needs to be like financially, you know, capable from a financial standpoint, you know. And that's just going to take time, right? It's going to take time of the market maturing, endemic and non-endemic brands understanding the engagement that's happening in esports. Because you need to put money at the end of the day to get, you know, credible people like an Alex Garfield that runs EG. Like, he's not going to do that for free, right? And you know, there's people out there that are doing that content for free right now because it's passion work. It's really good for a resume if you're younger and all that stuff. But inevitably, in order to do what you're talking about, which I do believe is 100% necessary, there needs to be more marketing dollars to be able to fund those positions. Or else it's just not going to happen, right? It's just not possible. Because you can only get to so many points where you have volunteer people that are running it and getting a part of it. Like, VVV's done a great job at that. You know, a lot of people that are doing content work as a volunteer level, but to start managing it, going out there, acquiring brands and all of that for marketing dollars, it's just going to take time. And you're seeing it more and more every year. Like, EG and Team Liquid are like the only two people doing it more. Now you see like Optic Gaming, Envious, Complexity's obviously been around for a long time doing it as well. Like all these different now brands starting to do it. You know, Cloud9 is doing it, Team Solo Mid. You know, like it's just going to take time. But before it was like getting a sponsor was like hallelujah. You know, like my God, we landed, you know, $2,000 a month. And you know, now there's players are on salaries. You've got managers that are making salaries that are running just the team, going out there like, you know, putting them in team houses. So, yeah, it's going to shock the market, right? So it takes time. And I think, you know, I'm working a lot with non-endemic and endemic brands at Machinima and seeing them get more into gaming. Then they see more about esports because it's very brand-safe content. I mean, huge engagement that happens there, brand loyalty. So once these things, these dollars start funneling into the market, you'll see more of it because, again, I think you make a point where you need to do that, right? Because Machinima's not going to be able to do it. GameSpot's not going to be able to cover all these players all the time, build these brands, you know, ourselves. And teams are going to need to be able to highlight their players and put them on a pedestal. And that's difficult. It's not easy. I mean, look at SK, the League of Legends team. Like, Ocelot is really, you know, you'd be very hard-pressed to be able to name the other four players on that team, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the truth of it. And, like, SK's going to need, and they do. They just brought in, like, someone's going to do media content, create more content. So you're like, oh, yeah, I know, all, you know, more of these players. Because it's tough.
So out of all that, what do you believe would be the next step in the next, like, 1 or 2 years?
So the immediate future?
Yeah.
I think the immediate future, you're going to just see more tournaments pop up in general. Because right now, it's LCS is all the time, right? So that's amazing. Keeps you constantly interacting, which is a great thing. But like StarCraft 2 and Call of Duty, you're not seeing that. You know, WCS was a great thing that Blizzard did. I mean, it's kind of failed a little bit, but I think they'll figure it out, right? It's just like it's just they're getting into it, doing it on like a more reoccurring basis. And there's a lot of like technical hiccups, and there's a lot of things that it took Riot 3 seasons to kind of figure it all out too. You know, you're gonna see more of that, like constant engagement in competitive play. Tournaments like, you know, like we had MLG Anaheim, but now we have Gfinity in London. This is the first time this event has existed, you know, and EGL just announced another one. So more frequency of these tournaments so you can put more dollars behind it. You can find, like, if you're in marketing, you don't want just these 10 full events. You know, you don't want every 3 months someone talking about your brand. You want someone talking or being a part of your brand every week, every day, right? So you're going to need to be able to do this more often. So I think it's going to, in the next year or two, you'll see more tournaments and more content, right? I mean, it sounds like very elementary of a response, but truth be told, like, more people are gonna be doing more content, which is gonna, because, you know, esports has always been huge peaks, and then it's like, no one talks about it, and then another event, and then no one talks about it, right? And now you're gonna see, like, that stop, like, going to the bottom. You'll see it kind of plateau out more, where there'll be a lot more content that's happening in between events for people to consume and stay engaged and stay excited for the next event. That's what's gonna happen, and that will then fuel those major events. Well, you're going to see a lot higher concurrency. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw 100% increase in concurrent viewership this time next year. You know, take Call of Duty as an example, right, where it did like 70,000 peak. I will not be surprised if 2014, this time next year, we see 140,000 concurrent, right? As long as it maintains that path of the developer you know, marketing it and from a social, just pushing it out, making sure that people that play that game know about it, and then yeah, I see it keep continuing to grow. It's gonna hit another growth spurt like it did the past 2 years.
Yeah.
It's kind of being set up to do so.
Do you view those things as band-aids or long-term fixes though?
What do you mean by band-aids?
Like, just having like, more tournaments is a very immediate reaction to adding more coverage. Do you think that is the solution or just a solution for now?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, it's definitely a solution for now because it's something that's like, it needs to happen so people stay engaged. But what it's gonna do though, where it is a long-term fix and not a band-aid, is gonna make those already big established 10-pole events even bigger, right? So MLG, after 10 years, whatever it's been now, had the most people ever attend or spectate an event physically ever in the history of it. It was 21,000 people bought a spectator pass, right? So this stuff that's happening, even if it's like small, like a UMG, you know, like UMG did some Call of Duty LAN and, you know, 150 teams showed up, pretty impressive, but I mean, it's Fight Club of esports, right? It's, you know, you're fighting to get like a four-man station, there's no referees, it gets a little out of control, it's not very well structured, and it's kind of endearing, right? You know, because it makes you still love and appreciate where it started from. So I think you'll see more of those that will help than these big events that are already well established. People that will benefit from it the most will be people like MLG or an EGL or any of these well-established international brands too that are doing it. Like ESL, you know?
Yeah.
Like look at where they're at now. I mean, they're struggling not too long ago, and all of a sudden they land the Riot LCS deal, they land WCS deal, and they're doing media content as well. They're flourishing, you know?
Yeah.
And it's quickly how things have changed in a year, right? MLG had their back up against the wall, taking it like a fourth round, you know, struggling. Yeah. They actually profited for the first time, I believe first time ever, at MLG and
I. Yeah. I mean, I remember Sundance was talking at Dallas about it. He was like, way more optimistic than I've ever heard of before.
Mm-hmm. And not too long before that, you know, he wasn't like incredibly optimistic, right?
Yeah.
So it's a good time to be in esports, especially if you're a well-established brand.
Yeah.
It was unfortunate what happened with IPL, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Like, IPL would have been great to keep that around. It's just, that sucks that happened.
Yeah, definitely. One last thing, just I'll let you eat.
No worries, sorry I'm doing this too, man.
That's cool. What do you think, the next generation of like streaming features play into this?
It's a good question. So I think Twitch has been incredibly beneficial to the esports community for the platform that they built and given a home for all these people to go to, and it's been a nice between casual gamers and esports enthusiasts coming together and really creating this like platform for people to get into it. Them being in the Xbox is a really big thing. I think, you know, there's not like integration isn't gonna like spark esports, right? That, you know, how much really this Joe Schmo in Ohio being able to stream from his Xbox really gonna benefit esports as a whole? It's just really not. It's cool. It'll bring more brand recognition to Twitch. It'll bring more brand recognition to YouTube Live, where people will then want to go out and maybe search more for this content, or it makes it more easily accessible when, you know, Machinima has an app, Twitch has an app, where you can just go on your Xbox, right, instead of your laptop and watch it. It's the fact that it makes the content more easily accessible is nice, but it's not any kind of igniter for esports hit the next level.
Right.
You know, I think it's good, but it's live streaming as a platform is great. I mean, it's the only way. Like, esports is never going to go mainstream. It's tried. It doesn't fail. It's not designed for television. We're a culture. Our generation is growing up online. We're consuming all of our content online on the internet. So it's got to be live streaming that's going to keep driving esports. So, but I don't think anything like the integration in the Xbox One or Ustream in a PlayStation 4 really is going to do anything. I think it's great for their respective brands, and that's awesome. And because of that, it'll give you, you know, more brand awareness. But I don't think it's huge for esports. I think live streaming, though, as a whole, is tremendous for esports. Yeah, obviously. That goes without saying. Yeah.
I think that's all I got, man.
Yeah, and if you have any other questions too, like I missed out, just send me an email and I'll try to answer.
Yeah, sounds good.
Awesome, dude.